Welcome to the Real Jaws Minute. I'm Tyson Ferris.
I'm Jeremy Sternhagen.
And today we got...
Alligator.
Alligator.
Oh boy.
Oh boy, oh boy.
I'm excited.
I am excited that you made me watch this.
Yeah?
Yeah.
We talked about it, I think, at the end of the last episode, that you were pretty jazzed to see it because you had never seen it before.
Yeah, and I'm a big Robert Forster fan.
Mm-hmm.
And... yeah, I was delighted with this film.
Yeah. Well, I think I've said this before. I think I said it about Piranha, that I'm so glad you like it.
And I'm starting to see a lot of crossover here
mm-hmm.
in kind of some of our other movies that we've talked about, because this has the same writer as Piranha.
Yeah, we mentioned that in the Piranha episode. John Sayles made a small career for himself out of Jaws ripoffs.
Yeah, I think he basically... This is how he bankrolled his independent career out of the gates, was doing all these little writing jobs.
Yeah, so. And Piranha was a Roger Corman production, and this movie is not. However, it's full of Roger Corman people, including Louis Teague, John Sayles, Robert Forster.
Yep.
So,
I think, from just watching the movie and not knowing much about how it was made,
mm-hmm.
I imagine it was made with the Roger Corman school of thought.
You know what? Side note, do you know this movie is out of print and you can't watch it anywhere or buy it unless you're willing to fork out big dollars for the DVD unless you know someone or unless you're that kind of person who scours the internet for downloads?
So it's out of... Like
it's
is there
not on any streaming platform.
Okay.
The DVD has been out of print for 10 years. Okay. So you're going to pay top dollar on eBay. And it's never been released in any high def format. There is a Blu-ray from Germany, but I checked it out. It's just a crappy, it's a DVD quality Blu-ray.
Gotcha.
It's not very good.
So
so it may be hard for our viewers to actually access this movie is kind of where I'm getting at.
Interesting. Hey, everybody. This is Tyson, just inserting myself into the proceedings here. So we found, after recording this, that there are two places you can watch this. There's a YouTube link, and there's also a Daily Motion link, and those will be in the description of the podcast. So be sure to check it out there. Now would be a good point, if you haven't, to pause this and go check out Alligator. Yeah, both those links are working, and you can check out the movie. The Daily Motion one is a bit better quality. Keep that in mind. All right, and back to the podcast.
This movie, I'm just going to start off by saying, I think I told the same story with Piranha, that there was a little grocery store close to my house that had very small selection.
Mm-hmm.
They had Piranha and Alligator. So this would have been like 1989, 1990.
Sure.
And I can't remember which one I saw first. But I remember we got Alligator, and I expected, even as a 12-year-old or whatever, expected nothing out of this movie. And me and my cousin Phil watched it at his house. And we were both, we didn't know who Robert Forster was. We just had no expectations going into this movie. And we both, after it was over, were like, that was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
I like that movie.
Yeah.
And all the notes that hit, all the parts that were supposed to be scary were scary.
Yeah.
All the parts that were funny were funny.
This is a very funny movie.
Yeah.
It got
funnier later in my life rewatching it as I got older. I get new things.
It seems to delight how absurd it is.
Yes. And it's not as like, so Piranha wears its tongue-in-cheekness like on its sleeve,
mm-hmm.
and to the point where like people are looking, you know, they're winking at the camera practically.
Sure.
And the dialogue is way more absurd in Piranha, whereas this movie kind of walks the line of...
This movie takes itself seriously, but then there's all these little moments where you realize that it's, like, on its face value, it's taking itself seriously, mm-hmm. and then if you're really looking, you realize that it's not. So it's like...
That the filmmakers are in on the joke.
Yeah. So it's like, kind of secretly tongue-in-cheek, I guess.
Yeah.
That was my takeaway from it.
Yeah, so. Especially thanks to Robert Forster, who he was even responsible for making it funnier than it was scripted.
Yeah.
Which we'll get into. But I just have, I think we don't have any more ripoffs to watch in our podcast. Is this the last one?
Is this
one?
The last ripoff? I don't know. I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I think it is. Oh, well, we have more bad movies in our future. We have one Jaws sequel to go.
Yeah.
But I think as far as ripoffs and spoofs that we've selected, this is it. And chronologically, it is the one to watch last. But also, I will say I saved the best for last, I think. I wondered, though, not that it has to be compared directly to Piranha. Mm-hmm. How does it compare to Piranha in your mind?
I like this. This has more rewatchability to me than Piranha.
I think I've probably seen them both equal amount of times.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because Piranha, I think, like with my younger siblings when I was a teenager, like that one, you know, it's basically Gremlins level of violence.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this one is definitely feels targeted at a little bit older audience. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think as I've gotten older, my watchability scale has tipped in the mm-hmm. favor of this movie. I think even though as a kid, though, I would have said Alligator's better.
Yeah.
And definitely it was more my kind of movie because it was way more genre scary, which mm-hmm. is always my
this movie has everything going against it.
Yeah.
It is formulaic.
Mm-hmm.
You know exactly where it's going. It's preposterous. It's silly. It has
the effects are questionable sometimes.
Bad kind of ham-fisted social commentary mm-hmm. and everything about this. As I was rewatching it for notes, my notes sound like this is a terrible movie and I love this movie.
I have similar notes.
And I was like, why? I go, this works so good when you're just watching it at its pace. And if you start like pausing and like going moment to moment, it almost kind of falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I still love it. I think I think this is a fantastic film. I just adore it. It's great.
I'm so happy. For me, what works about it is that unlike...
Once again, much like Piranha, and I think I said this about Piranha. Sorry to interrupt, but mm-hmm. That's what I do.
That's fine. We're friends.
Anybody that listens to this podcast knows that Ty's the interrupter.
I was about to say, I've known you a long time. I signed up for this.
But what I was saying, and this is why I interrupt, because now I can't remember what I was going to say. Because if I don't interrupt, then I just lose it. What was I saying? Piranha was a very efficient film
mm-hmm.
in its storytelling and its filmmaking. Mm-hmm. This is very much in kind with mm-hmm. that. The storytelling is very efficient. Every scene has a little nugget that then pays off later, you know, so
my favorite thing about this movie, which I hadn't really processed until I rewatched it over the past couple weeks, I've probably watched it three or four times in the mm-hmm. last. The second time I watched it to take notes, I just watched it again.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third time, I took some notes, but then I ended up just watching it.
Yeah.
It's really short. It's 90 minutes, just like Piranha.
This is much like Duel. This is an easy 90.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But my big takeaway on this movie is, and the reason I like it the best of the movies we've watched so far, is the storyline, the Robert Forrester story and all the stuff that's going on with him in his life that mm-hmm. has nothing to do with the alligator directly, in and of itself, it's a good movie. So take the alligator out of this movie, it's still a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the plot is, you know, the alligator is basically the
MacGuffin. He's our Brody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's as good as Jaws in the sense of, I shouldn't say that, but you're compelled with the non-alligator characters.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think even the other character, every other character they introduce in this movie, like everyone that's is
what,
a character.
That's what tips this over Piranha for me.
Yeah.
Is I think there are better characters in this film than Piranha has.
Yes.
They're very cardboard in Piranha, and here mm-hmm. they feel a lot more fleshed out.
Yeah. In Piranha, everyone is sort of playing it like a 1920s, what would you call it?
Like they're in King Kong or something.
Yeah. The villains in Piranha are like twirling their mustaches.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And in this movie, everyone's just, there is... Well, let's just start into the movie, right?
Yeah. Let's start right out. So the setup for this movie mm-hmm. is horribly efficient.
With the opening scene in is it Louisiana or wherever they're starting out?
I think they're in Florida.
Florida, yeah.
Yep. And they're at a gator farm.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy gets mauled by a gator.
I love it.
It's great.
And it makes sense.
It does.
It's stupid.
It's stupid.
The guy is stupid in the set.
And this is a real thing that happens in Florida, apparently.
Yeah.
This is not, fictionalized. Also, they say, I think this guy's he's like, hey, so let's give a hand for him. He's going to be okay. He'll be on his feet in no time.
Apparently this happens every day,
and
every show.
I'm like, I don't think this guy's going to be okay.
That guy just had the muscle ripped off his bones.
Yeah. Like his whole calf is gone. Yeah. Yikes. Anyway. But it's so efficient. The whole thing happens in the credits, the whole setup.
Yeah. Doesn't the final credit run right over the toilet flushing?
The toilet flushing.
Yeah. It's perfect.
Yeah. So my only nitpick for it is I had to turn on subtitles because I could not for the life of me figure out why the dad wants the girl, and then because the girl's not there, mm-hmm. he flushes an alligator down the toilet. I could not figure out, so I had to turn on the subtitles, and then in the subtitles I was able to figure out why. So he's yelling for the girl, and he's yelling for her, and she's like, she's not here, he's carrying it up the steps, he goes, she should have been here taking care of this gator. He goes, there's alligator turds behind the hamper.
So this alligator's running loose in the house.
And pooping behind the clothes hamper.
I don't know that I caught that originally.
Yeah, I had to turn on the subtitles to get it. Because I could not figure out. I'd go, okay, so he wants to find his daughter. She's at the science fair,
mm-hmm.
so then he flushes an alligator down the toilet,
mm-hmm.
thinking he's killing it.
Yeah.
And I was like, that motivation does not track. But then once I listened to the subtitles.
Yes.
I was like, oh, it's because it's pooping in the house and he doesn't like that. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's not uber clear.
Yeah.
And this was the second time I was watching it, and I was like, yep, still doesn't make sense why he flushes that. And it's like, I might want to look at that. Anyway.
So however many times I've seen this movie, 10 maybe, I learned something new about this opening scene for the first time mm-hmm. upon watching it this time because I had the subtitles on.
Oh, cool.
You ready for this? And I'm not sure if I like it.
Okay.
The little girl, that's our female lead later in the movie. Same girl.
Oh, I knew that.
You did?
I knew that the first time I watched
it. Okay. Well, see, that's the problem is I've seen this movie 100 times. you stop paying attention to this kind of stuff. So yeah, I didn't know. And the reason I found out is because
she even talks about it later.
Midway
into the film, she talks about her alligator that she had named Ramon when they're beating all
does
the...
Does she say Ramon?
Yeah.
Okay. See, this is the problem with seeing movies 100 times. You're just you just don't.
Just kind of fall asleep.
You're just like, I know this scene. There's nothing new for me to learn in this scene. Yeah, I didn't know. But the reason I knew her name, I was taking notes and I wrote down that Robin Riker's name is Marissa.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I watched this opening scene, I'm like, her name's Marissa. Oh.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I like that particular story turn,
but
whatever.
I like it, but I also don't know anything different. So.
Yeah.
It's always been that way for me.
It's
just two times that I've watched it.
Well, I think it adds to the weird. It almost ties into to the end of the movie, how the movie ends, and then another alligator plops
down.
Well,
and it also ties into how the convenience of the plot of this movie, which
I have many notes on.
Yeah.
That. Like I said, I've seen this movie 10 times, and rewatching it this time, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
But movie. Yeah.
But how else are you going to get this character?
Yeah. Yeah.
To this place.
Yeah. So then right off the gates, we get a great character actor, Sidney Lassick. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name.
And who is he playing?
He is the pet store clerk.
Okay. I did not take any notes on him, but he looks familiar.
Gutchel is his name. Last name, Gutchel.
In real life?
No. His name is Sidney Lassick. Is his acting name.
He looks familiar.
Yeah, he, you know him from like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, yes.
He's in a million TV shows throughout the 80s and 90s.
He's got that look.
He always plays this kind of, portly, shifty.
Dopey.
He's never dopey, but he's always kind of shifty and like kind of weird.
Yeah.
But he's great. And always kind of like kind of nebbish and nervous, you know, like that's just kind of the character you always play.
Yeah. Well, so, he's awesome.
Yeah, he's great. My next note is I love Robert Forster. Now I notice I'm saying Forster. You're saying Forrester.
It's Forster. It's not Forrester.
Yeah.
It's Forster.
Forster.
Yes. Okay. Sorry. Okay. Mystery Science Theater fan, Dr. Clayton Forrester. Sorry. War of the Worlds reference, too.
There you go.
Yes. Forster.
I just wanted to make sure I wasn't wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And worth noting, because who knows when people are listening to this podcast, that pretty much right before, well, I think it was before our last podcast is when we heard he passed away.
Yes, very suddenly. I was so delighted the other night we were watching the Breaking Bad movie, El Camino.
Yes.
And he shows up in that, unbeknownst to me.
Yep.
And I just heard his voice before you hear his voice before the character is actually shown.
Mm-hmm.
And my heart leapt.
Yeah.
When I heard his voice. And I was like, oh my God. Anyway,
I love his voice. I want to hear his voice more in like, I wonder if he voiced any animated things in the past. I should check that out.
He would have been great at that. Yeah.
He is awesome.
Yeah. He's great. It's just such a natural style to his acting. I just really love it.
He's likable in everything he's in.
Yeah. So then we also get the first bald cracks.
Yeah.
In this scene.
Which, by the way.
I feel Tarantino must be a huge alligator fan.
Yeah. And I.
Because the only other movie this shows up in.
Is Jackie Brown. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen Jackie Brown in a long time. I wanted to rewatch it before this podcast. I just didn't get around to it. But
there's two movies where Robert Forster talks about his hair loss.
Mm-hmm.
It's this movie and Jackie Brown. So
that's awesome.
There's no way Tarantino's not a fan of Alligator.
Well, I don't know what
I'm taking away from this.
Did you get a chance to listen to the commentary for Alligator?
I have not yet.
Okay, so on the commentary, which is Louis Teague and Robert Forster, Robert Forster mentions that wasn't in the script, and he apparently put it in.
His added thing.
Yeah, and in the first rough cut of the movie he saw, all those jokes had been edited out by Louis Teague, and Robert Forster said, do me a favor, put all the jokes back in and run it again for a new crowd. And everyone commented that they liked it.
They loved it. That was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because unless you point it out, like it's not super obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But then once it's pointed out, you're like, oh yeah, he's kind of thin, like a little bit. Like you can see it a little bit.
Yeah.
And
the way the jokes come in through the movie, it's not overt. Is it three times?
It's three or four times.
Yeah.
And it's well done.
One police officer and then Robin Riker, Marissa, brings it up. And
she brings it up. Yeah, it's four times. It's right here. It's
the police
guy that's telling him to swoop it, you know, Trump style.
Yep.
And then
Robin Riker
when they're like pillow talking and she talks about it and he's like, hey, I'm sensitive about
that. What are you doing?
Yeah. And then right at the end of the movie, we get one more hit of it.
At the very, very end?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember that one. But
it's where he suggests that the chief dates her mother. Mm. And she's like, oh, yeah, she loves men with increasingly...
receding hairlines or something.
No, it's like increasingly high foreheads.
Oh.
I think is how she puts it. And that's, he's like, nice. Yeah, yeah,
anyway. That's better than the line I just came up with.
Yeah. Or like men who with... Yeah, some about foreheads getting longer. Anyway, it's
yeah.
great. Yeah.
I love his character touches of like his messy wardrobe, holes in his shirt, leather mm-hmm. jacket. You know, he's very like, just does not fit a cop vibe.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I know that's like a trope, a movie trope, a TV trope that your homicide detectives are all kind of
He literally has raggedy. holes in his shirt in this scene.
Yes.
Yeah. A nice little thing that Sydney does is he lets the cash drawer hit him in the gut.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry, I jumped ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He lets the cash drawer hit him in the gut, and it just kind of shows that he's rattled, right? Yeah. But, David, what's his last name? David Forster's character. David something.
Oh. Shoot. I have it all right in front of me.
It's an M name. I can't remember the last name. Anyway, David doesn't notice it.
Oh, yeah. I don't even think that was scripted. David Madison.
Madison.
I don't even think that was like scripted. I'm sure that was just improvised character work.
But it's definitely on point with the character.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I mean.
It's a choice.
It's a definite choice by that actor to let that happen and show that he's rattled because he's not even paying attention to this machine that he is in front of all day long, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, I just thought it was a nice little touch. And that's where you...
Yeah.
That's why character actors are great, because they do stuff like that.
They definitely... The cast, I don't think there's a weak link in this cast.
No, there's not. Yeah, so then we get... we have Gutchell. He goes and abducts a dog. And then he goes to the bad science corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Slade.
Well, we kind of skip past the sewer scene. We get to meet Michael Gazzo, who plays the chief from Michael Gazzo, who is in The Godfather 2.
Oh, okay.
I knew I recognized him when I saw him. And I
recognized
to go.
Him too, but I couldn't figure out what it was.
Yeah. And I don't know when else to point this out, but another thing that's kind of odd about this movie.
We have a sewer scene before we get to the...
Not the sewer scene, but the sewage, the water treatment plant where they find the severed arm.
Yeah, where they find the severed arm, yep.
They find the severed arm, and then is it this scene?
Oh, that's the small casket
line. Yeah, I have that note.
Which is great.
All they buried was a toe. It must have been a small casket.
Yeah.
That was a great line.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we get him hunting down the dogs.
Yeah.
I don't know when else to point this out, but it always cracked me up. I think if you would have asked me before I rewatched it last week, where does this movie take place? I think I would have initially forgotten that it's allegedly taking place in Chicago.
It's so obviously taking place in LA.
It's so incredibly obviously Southern California.
Yeah.
The amount of like concrete landscapes.
Well, and the LA River that we see constantly.
Things that aren't in Chicago, like these sewers. And the occasional
palm. Do you think it takes place in Chicago?
It is. It's scripted as Chicago.
I thought it was Wisconsin. I thought it was like Wisconsin or something.
It says in the beginning of the movie, it says Florida. And then I believe in the opening scene with the little girl,
they go to
Missouri. It says Missouri. Like, it says something like welcome to Missouri or something.
Yeah. I can't remember if it was
something like that. I might be remembering wrong, but then there's a lot of state jumping around in this movie because Robert Forrester,
but then they have St. Louis, right?
He came from St. Louis.
Yeah.
Like that's where he used to be a cop. So there's, the opening scene where the alligator gets flushed down the toilet is Missouri.
Okay.
Then we hear that Robert Forrester's character is previously St. Louis.
So it doesn't take place in the place where the alligator got flushed.
No. Chicago is where.
Where does it say Chicago? I swear it gets flushed in the same place where.
You know what I think is, okay.
Where are you getting Chicago? I want proof. There's no way this takes place in Chicago.
I believe so. I don't have it specifically in my notes. Let's see here. Where did I get it from? Or they're driving through Missouri and they end up in Chicago, but there's a scene in the beginning where it says, welcome to Missouri.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's very possible that they're returning home to Chicago, that they're just...
I think that scene is stating where they're supposed to be at.
Which is what?
Somewhere in Missouri.
I'm pretty sure it's Chicago. We better pause this podcast and solve this mystery. Let's see. Oh, okay. The Wikipedia page says Chicago.
Where is there a line or something that says that that's the right way?
We're going to have to figure this out.
Because Wikipedia doesn't know.
IMDb, a baby alligator is flushed down a Chicago toilet. Big picture here. Wherever this movie is, looks nothing like Chicago. There's a couple of like insert shots. Well,
it also
shots.
Doesn't look like Missouri if that's where it takes place either.
Not really, no.
Yeah.
I've been to both places.
Yeah.
Wherever this movie was, I mean, this movie was filmed in LA. That I know 100%.
Yeah, I mean, that's the
end. And there's a couple of insert shots of like Chicago area buildings that are just like an establishing shot. I think the scene when he goes to visit Robin Morris's mother, mm-hmm. there's like an outside establishing shot of like a Chicago kind of house.
Hmm. I'm not convinced.
Okay. That shot exists?
No, I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm just saying this movie does not take place in Chicago because there's no way that's a thing.
Yeah. Anyone who's listening who's from Chicago, show me a scene where...
No, I'm literally saying in the movie it doesn't take place in Chicago because there's nothing that establishes that.
I'm not... There's got to be.
Also, I was watching it on your Plex server... And the thing there says it grows big eating laboratory rats. There's no lab rats in that movie.
Oh, well, that's pulled. that description's pulled off another website, I think, called the Movie Database.
Well.
Technology. Never trust the internet, people.
Yep. I'm saying, shocker, Wikipedia might be wrong.
All right. Well, real quick mental note for the podcast. I need to do this. Okay, so they're driving. Welcome to Missouri.
Yep.
Which, by the way, is definitely... That was shot in L.A. for sure.
Isn't it... But isn't St. Louis in Missouri?
Yes.
Okay. That's a check in my column.
Okay, yes. Well, I didn't say that didn't happen. I definitely said there's a scene where it says they're driving through Missouri.
I just think they're somewhere else in Missouri. They're not in St. Louis. They're somewhere
12
else.
Years.
Is there a Chicago, Missouri?
No.
It's like we're in Portland, but it's not Portland, Maine. It's Portland, Oregon. You sure there's not a Chicago, Missouri?
No, I'm not sure. I would think we'd know about that. I've driven all over Missouri for my work.
Okay.
I don't remember driving through Chicago. This is a weird tangent. But I want to know. So they're not in St. Louis. Otherwise, you wouldn't say.
But that doesn't mean they're not.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they're not in Missouri, though.
The newspaper's called the National Probe. No reference to a city.
Yep.
There's another one called the Metropolitan Ledger. And then another one called the Daily Bugle.
There you go.
No specific city reference.
I think this is a situation where people think this is Chicago, and they're wrong. Much like a lot of people think, like Seven takes place in New York.
It takes place nowhere.
It takes place nowhere.
It's never specifically said.
Yep.
And the geography of the movie actually would lend itself to definitely not being in New York because they drive out to a California-esque place for the finale.
Yeah, it's... But at any point in time, that movie feels like New York, Chicago, and L.A. Like, it's just a mishmash of city.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I actually like. It's this weird... It's like Gotham. You know,
every website I look at says Chicago.
Well, I'm saying every website's wrong. Where does it say in the movie?
All right, one more.
Okay.
Hold on.
And then we got to get going.
I know. Sorry. Radio news coverage of the 1968 Democratic Convention intended to date the sequence is often misinterpreted to mean alligator is set in Chicago, but it is clearly set in Missouri, although not in St. Louis. Missouri State University has an active...
Oh, wow.
Somebody was on the same.
God, I'm good.
All right, let's start recording, okay? Okay, so we took a quick...
We're recording.
You'll figure it out. Okay, so... okay, I'm looking at this website called And You Call Yourself a Scientist, which looks hilarious. Payback is a bitch. Pets gone wild. A bee master's roundtable. And then they have a whole website on alligator. Boy, I wish I would have found this in my research. And there's a great, I want to credit whoever wrote this.
By the way, folks, this was about a 10 minute endeavor here that you probably won't get all of it. So,
okay. So here's what I just found. So we were trying to figure out where this movie takes place because everywhere says Chicago.
Well, you were, I was sure where it took place.
Okay. I think when we started this, didn't I say like the first time I saw this movie, I would have never said it's in Chicago, but then everything I read online, it's like, it's in Chicago. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So anyway,
and I immediately was like, wait, where does it say Chicago? Like,
yeah. Okay. So
I'm not buying Chicago
on all. This website. And, I just read this sentence once and I agree 100% with whoever wrote it. It says, back home in the burbs, Ramon begins a new life in an aquarium, which alas, he will not enjoy for long. Radio news coverage of the 1968 Democratic Convention, so that would have been 12 years before this movie takes place, mm-hmm. intended to date the sequence. It's often interpreted to mean alligator is set in Chicago, but it's clearly set in Missouri, although not in St. Louis. Missouri State University has an active herpetology program, which would mean it takes place in Springfield. Whatever was intended, we will shortly be provided with incontrovertible evidence that this film was shot in LA. Well, that we know that. So,
well, there's no argument about that.
There's palm trees.
Yeah.
So anyway, Tyson, you win. This movie does not take place in Chicago, despite what many websites say.
Oh man.
It takes place in somewhere in Missouri, most likely Springfield.
Yum, yum, yum.
Feast on the winning.
Victory. Oh, that tastes good.
All right. So we just shot down most websites along. Thank you from this website.
Yeah. It looks like 99% of the internet says this takes place in Chicago and they are wrong.
Oh man. I want to just pause and read this entire website right now. Cause it seems to be full of great information.
We got sheesh to do, man.
I totally agree. It's a great website.
All right. We're not even like 5 minutes into this film. I need puppies.
Oh. Yeah, that's...
It's like, wow.
I said there wasn't much mustache twirling in this movie, but...
Yeah, maybe. And they say the word puppies like 12 times in this scene. Puppies, puppies. It's like doctor, 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 but with puppies. And I go, wow, bad guy is bad. Yes. I don't need any dogs.
I need more puppies.
I need puppies. And I was like, wow. And then so, I'm like, what does this guy have on Gutchel?
Yeah.
And then come to find out, Gutchel's just in it for the money. But that doesn't seem to be the case here. Like,
yeah. He must be seriously leveraged some way by the cat need for cash.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't strike you as a person who wants to see harm come to dogs.
Well, he's a pet store owner. I don't think. Yeah.
Well, and even said to Robert Forster a minute ago, he's like, oh man, you really love the little guys.
Or something totally.
Like that, don't you?
And he's obviously stolen Forster's dog, right?
Oh yeah. He says snapped right out of the window.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man. That makes sense too.
Yeah. Like the original dog.
I should really watch this movie.
Yeah, you really should. I'm feeling like an expert over here. I've seen it twice.
I'm jealous to see it through your fresh eyes. Oh, man.
I come with a scalpel on these things.
Yeah.
So we get him investigating this arm that they found.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to a sewer, a manhole.
And we run into another character actor that I know I've seen in 100 movies.
Yeah.
But I forgot to look up who he was.
Yeah, I didn't look him up either. But yeah, I did recognize him. This is one of my favorite references in the film. He's like, hey, did you know a guy named Edward Norton? And I was like, that's hilarious.
It, is that reference to the Honeymooners?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because Ed Norton on the Honeymooners was a sewer worker.
Oh, yeah. I don't know that show well enough, but as soon as you mentioned that, I'm like, oh, yeah, I think I remember that.
Anyway, I just was like, oh, nice reference movie.
That's funny.
Good job. Anyway, I was like, that's funny.
On the nose.
Yep. So then we get Guttrell. They talk for a while, and then we get Guttrell disposing of the dogs.
Yeah. I like this scene.
I do too. Why does it matter where the dogs go in the sewer?
Like, why does he have to go all the way deep, deep down into the sewer?
So the one drops in the water, and then the one drops kind of on the little sidewalk next to the water. And I'm like.
And he has to climb down there.
But why does it matter?
Yeah.
Who's going in there?
And we've already established that anything he puts down there is just flushing out into the water treatment plant anyway.
Right? I just don't totally get it. Yeah. Anyway.
Definitely falls under the category of don't think too hard.
Yeah.
But yeah.
He does have a great line while he's trying to. So it did make more sense this time that there's like this shopping cart or trash or something that's like kind of blocking the pipe way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the dogs aren't flowing down. So that made more sense. And he's trying to get that out while before he's attacked. But he does have this line where he's like, wow, it's really blocked out. He's like something like it's really blocked out because it's not exactly the Nile.
Yeah.
I was like, the Nile.
I didn't quite get that.
Yeah. But... And I was like, the Nile, nice.
Yeah.
Even though that's obviously crocodiles, but not alligators.
Oh, now it makes sense. Yeah. A little more sense to me. Yeah.
There are Nile crocodiles.
So, yes.
Anyway, there's all kinds of little alligatory lines like throughout this movie.
Like the guy had alligator shoes and
stuff. Like that. So later his foot shows up or his leg shows up, right? Yeah. And it's like, yeah, the guy was wearing alligator wingtips.
Even as a kid, I remember that line, like going, that's very on the nose.
I'm like, so the guy that got ate by the alligator in the sewer was wearing alligator shoes. I was like, nice.
Yeah. I do like that we get our one thing I appreciate about this movie, unlike our other ripoff movies that we've been watching. I know there's some actual orcas in Orca, but I do like that we do get our occasional real alligators in this movie. The reveal on his eye opening, I think, is a really great way to.
Yeah, totally. Him kind of waking up. Because they really treat it like a real alligator. And if you've ever seen alligators or crocodiles, they might as well be statues.
Oh, they barely. Their whole hunting strategy is to creep up on you like a log.
Yeah, they just don't move.
And lunge.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Every character he catches in this movie is basically off guard.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's his only way to get him.
I actually think a lot of the effects in this film work really, really well.
Yeah.
And it's mostly because alligators don't express or do anything. There's nothing that the effects alligators are doing that is different from what a real alligator would do.
Yeah. The only reason they're employing.
They're awkward. They just, I don't know. And they don't really move all that much. Like they're stiff, you know, they're kind of.
Yeah, totally.
Do you know what I mean? Like.
Yeah, nothing in the movie. I mean, there's a few shots where if you look at it, you're like, okay, that's definitely the fake alligator.
Much like Jaws, the only time I have a problem, there's really only one shot in this entire film where I really have a problem with the effect.
Okay.
And it's with a real alligator.
Which one?
It's at the end in the tunnel where he's shooting at it.
Yeah. Oh, and it lurches.
And it's kind of lurching back and forth. It's the only time the alligator effect doesn't work for me. Every other time, I'm totally buying all the alligator effects. Honestly.
So if we're thinking of the same shot, I always took that shot as that's a real alligator genuinely freaking out about being shot at. Where it lurches its head to the side?
I imagine they're shooting blanks at it, but it's obviously in like a miniature tunnel.
Okay, you don't like the like perspective.
It's the only time the perspective stuff doesn't work for me.
Yeah. Because a lot of the scenes of the alligator walking, it's like a adolescent crocodile walking on a miniature set.
Mm-hmm.
Which I love it that they get those shots. Like, that's real. Like, that's better than a fake alligator, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
And about the only time they use the fake alligator is when it's, like, eating people mm-hmm. or, you know, lunging within inches of actors' heads.
Yeah. So my next note, he must be a really great detective. I do not see how he could possibly be talking to Slade Pharmaceuticals already, or Slade Chemicals.
How he closed the loop that fast?
He took these two separate body parts that showed up in a sewer
mm-hmm.
and then connected them to Slade already. Like, I mean, we're 10 minutes into this film. And like, I'm like, I don't understand how he... I mean, I get it because I'm the person watching the movie, but I don't get how he possibly could make these connections.
Well, now I'm wishing I would have paid more attention to the movie. So he found the dead dogs. And
so he's found a he's found a dead dog that's yep. bigger than it should be.
Yep.
He has found a arm and a leg.
Mm-hmm.
And he has somehow connected these to Slade Chemicals. And yeah. is now questioning the Slade Chemical scientist, which they have only one of.
Yes. All right, so now...
He's ostensibly the only person that works for Slade. And now he's questioning this man about the dogs and, man, they're quiet. And he's like, oh, yeah, we cut their larynx so they can't bark. And
so he, I remember that there's,
I just don't know how possibly you would get to Slade with the evidence he has been presented with.
I think we're missing something obvious, but yeah, I feel isn't so he knows he's got dead dogs and he knows he has a dead pet store owner,
a dead dog
and a dead.
I'm not even sure he knows it's the pet store owner yet.
He finds his shirt. He recognizes the shirt
immediately. Oh, okay.
They pull the shirt out.
Okay.
And then when he goes to Slade, the first line, like as soon as he goes to Slade, is like, "Do you ever do business with a guy named Gutchell?"
That's right.
And then the Slade guy says, like, "We get them from the pound, or we breed them here."
Hmm.
But yeah, I don't. Yeah, how did he? There's probably some line that we're missing, or there's nothing.
I don't think we're missing anything. I think the movie just makes a convenience that there's a lot of plot conveniences in this film. This is one of them. It's the first one.
Okay.
Let's not worry about it.
We must solve this movie.
When the movie is just playing at pace, you just kind of go with it.
It's also weird. Maybe things were different back then, but just that this movie takes, it's just accepted in this movie that they're doing animal testing here. And this Slade guy just like, yeah, we breed dogs so that we can do research on them. And then we cremate them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so they're breeding dogs to kill dogs.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a thing now. Maybe. I know there's like research rats and mice, but
one of my dad's ex students, who became a family friend and even lived with us for a while growing up. He ended up becoming a scientist and induces heart attacks in rabbits. Oof. For a living.
Yikes. Science, everybody.
Yeah. So he induces heart attacks in rabbits and then tries to save the rabbits.
Mm.
And because of that, and I mean, he's killed thousands and thousands of rabbits, you know, because he's killing many rabbits every day.
Yeah.
And sometimes not. Sometimes they save the rabbit. But eventually that rabbit will get another heart attack and it probably won't come back. But all that research has just made, they've made leaps and leaps and bounds with heart research. And
mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Yep. My wife worked in research and mice were a regular part of her everyday research life.
Yeah. So anyway, wild, but.
But yeah, this guy's a little, so it's easy for us as viewers to watch this guy and be like, what a creep.
But
it's puppies.
But I think the movie makes a distinct choice. Hey, we're not dealing with mice or rabbits or your common lab animal. No.
It's dogs.
We don't even want, and we don't even want dogs. We need puppies. This guy might as well go, and I also don't like ice cream, you know.
And I like to kick little kids when I see them.
He's like, candy from babies? Yes, please.
Yeah. So the movie, yeah, clearly anybody who's killing puppies is the villain.
Yeah. So then we get so he talks to Slade, and then.
Oh, and not mentioned, not only before he kills them.
Mr. Slade shows up.
He cuts their larynxes.
Oh, yeah. Before he kills them, he makes them not be able to talk anymore.
Yeah.
Cool.
So then we go to Mr. Slade, who is.
Is the godfather of this movie.
Yes.
Yeah. It's no other way to put him. He's like, oh, yeah, we'll put in the fix. He says fix about a million times in this scene. I feel like they just gave this actor, like, the idea of the scene and then just kind of let him go.
Yeah.
I don't think anything he's saying is written.
And this is Dean Jagger, who's famous from, like, a bunch of Westerns, apparently.
Yeah. I don't really know him, but.
No. Well, he's one of these Hollywood guys who's been around forever, and his filmography is huge. His biggest film credit is 12 O'Clock High.
Okay.
But, yeah. Apparently he was somebody, and I'm a poor film nerd at the moment because I just don't know him.
I really don't either. But yeah.
I think I've seen 12 O'Clock High one time.
Yeah. And then we get a press conference. This is great. We get a press conference with TV cameras.
Yeah.
For two body parts?
I think that...
that were found in a sewage system.
Which I would... In a big city, that's probably a not uncommon occurrence, I would hate to say.
I think when I made this note, I was thinking of L.A.
Yeah.
Like, they found two body parts in L.A. sewage system. And I'm like, this wouldn't even make the police blotter. Like...
No. Definitely. Now, but if we're in small town Springfield.
If we're in Springfield, then yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they just randomly bring up like that his partner was killed.
Yeah. This reporter.
This reporter's a real dick.
It's like a tabloidy. He must be working for a tabloidy publication.
Even
and
then.
And I think, they say the Probe is what the paper he works for is. Because when the article shows up, it's called the Probe or something like
that. The National Probe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the reporter's a little there's some funny lines in this, don't they? You know, the whole like he's a jerk journalist, they just want to raise circulation. Mm-hmm. And then don't they call him like a left-wing guy?
I feel like there's like some there's part of this movie that really kind of hit that kind of Trump fake news.
Yeah.
Thing. And I was like, is that what these filmmakers are going for? Like, I don't know. It was weird. But yeah. I'm seeing it partially with today's eyes a little bit. Like, I don't know. Yeah. It was weird.
There's a weird, yeah. I don't know what the movie's point of view is when it comes to reporters.
Like, they obviously don't think highly of them, I don't think.
Yeah. They make the guy come off as a real slime ball. But
yeah.
Mainly because he wants to drag Robert Forrester.
Forrester.
Or David Madison, rather.
David Madison.
Yeah.
Then we get a bomb guy.
I love this scene.
It's a great scene. It is weird.
It just kind of comes out of nowhere in the movie.
It does, but it has a lot of payoff.
Yeah. Well, I love that it, you know, shows him in a cop environment with, you know, regular beat cops.
Mm-hmm.
Every cop he asks to, it helps the payoff. It gives
there's multiple payoffs from this scene.
It establishes that no one wants to be his partner.
Yep.
It establishes that he's funny.
Yep.
And then it sets up this guy who eventually does go with him.
He's a super cool customer under pressure.
Super cool. Yeah.
Yep.
And I love the way it sets up. We don't just see, it would be a lot worse if they just cut to him in the sewer with a cop.
Yeah.
Right. So we get a little bit of character building for Robert Forrester Madison,
mm-hmm.
and we get a little buildup of character for this guy that's going to go with him.
Mm-hmm. And also, we might as well call him a Chekhov bomb guy, right?
Chekhov, because they show it
Because they show it here.
It has to go off later. And then it has to go off. Oh, it's the same one, yep. Right? Oh, geez. God dang it. It's almost like this movie is really well written.
It's so silly how much the Chekhov thing comes up in movies. And we'll have we actually have another one that comes up later that I'll point out. So now we're down in the sewers, right?
Mm-hmm. Before we get to, maybe you were going to get there, but the actor playing Kelly?
Yes.
Recognize him?
I recognize the giant chaw in his mouth.
He's in a movie that you might know, maybe not that well, but I'll just give you a hint. It's directed by Steven Spielberg.
Oh.
And it came out 1 year before this movie. He's in 1941.
Oh, really?
He's one of the main, young kids running around in 1941. All the, you know, the non-name actors?
Sure.
He's one of those kids.
Cool.
Actor named Perry Lang.
All right.
Anyway, when I watched this, I'm like, I know that guy from something. Looked him up on the internet. 1941.
Cool. Yeah, so they're down the sewer.
Mm-hmm.
So the maps are incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
They're lost. And they find the exact place where Gutchel got eaten.
Yeah.
What a lucky break.
Right. They go right there. Yeah.
In fact, they kind of seem to go to this same place numerous times during the movie. And I'm like, how are you guys still not finding the alligator? This is where it lives. And while they're down in the sewer, this is the other Chekhov.
Mm-hmm.
Chekhov's methane pocket.
Yep. Perfect setup. That one I got. I love the line as they're down there that Kelly, the young cop with him, says, "I don't go for that locker room crap." Like, I don't know why. I just like that.
I do like that line.
I like that line. Yeah. It just it shows that not everybody in this movie is like a paper thin.
Yep.
A thinly drawn character. Like we get guys who are like, "That's nothing."
Yeah.
But it also perfectly serves to set up that he's totally a red shirt. And he's about to get eaten.
Oh, yeah. He's 100% a red shirt. He loses him for some reason. That's weird.
A little weird.
That's weird.
Like,
but then for a guy that's not into locker room crap, him playing this grab ass prank.
He grabs a handful of, butt.
Yeah, he really does. And then we get this weird synthy Jaws esque music for the fake out.
Yeah, let me remind. I have thoughts about the music. I don't remember what the specific music cue you're talking about is.
So I feel like when it's guttural, it's creepy music and then it attacks him. But this music, I think they're doing actually the opposite of Jaws. When it's not the alligator, they're doing Jaws music.
Yes. And when it is the alligator,
they're not.
When they do,
they still have some music, but it's not like this. This is very dun 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 dun. But with synth, it's.
And the thing that I love, and maybe we're confused, maybe we have to play it so we can remember. But there's this weird musical instrument they use, for the alligator in this movie. That's kind of this weird that. It's like a weird synth strike.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very reminiscent. The only other movie that I know where I hear it all the time is another Robert Forster movie where the score is by John Barry, came out the year before this, called The Black Hole. The Black Hole is full of this weird sound. Mm-hmm. My favorite things about this scene are the shots of the alligator. I love the first shot of the alligator where it's an underwater shot and it slowly rises up. And as soon as it breaks, it opens its eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I think they got really lucky with a real alligator shot there.
Yep.
And did you catch, I don't think I caught this the first time I saw this movie.
I caught it the first time I watched.
The subtle reveal.
They're playing with a flashlight and they're looking at the map and you just see it for a half second, maybe a quarter of a second.
It's 1 foot behind their head.
And it's 1 foot behind their head, on this ledge.
Yes.
Oh, my God. It's so good.
I think
it is.
I know the first time I saw the movie, I didn't catch it.
Oh, wow.
And it's very reminiscent to me of Halloween.
It's very reminiscent of Halloween where he just kind of comes out of the darkness.
Yes.
It's very
where
like
he's
that.
Right behind Jamie Lee Curtis and they like reveal him in the light. It's awesome.
But also what this shows in it's kind of sets up the alligator for later is it is stalking them.
Yes. And I love the way it sets that up that it's behaving like a real, it's not a soup, other than being large.
Other than being big.
It's a normal alligator.
It's a normal alligator.
It's not like hyper intelligent or doing any, there's one thing that I question about what its motives are, but we'll get to that.
There was times in this movie where I had the opening for Rob Zombie's Living Dead Girl, where it has that voiceover. It's like something like insatiable lust for the dead.
Who is this irresistible creature who has an insatiable lust for the dead?
Yeah. Yes. Anyway, I was like, that's the alligator.
Because of dead dogs?
Well, dead dogs and just like, it cannot eat enough. Like, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. For some reason that popped in my head with this movie.
I bet Rob Zombie loves this movie.
I bet he does.
When they do finally do confront the alligator, where it just like lunges from around a corner mm-hmm. with its mouth wide open to go for Kelly, I can honestly say that scare is so like unexpected that I wasn't even ready to be scared.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, there it is. Well, yeah. Oh, okay. Like,
no, it's genuinely surprising.
Yeah.
It's almost a jump scare, but it, like in the best way, like a real, it's like a real scare. It's not even a jump scare. It's real
not
scare
as set up,
but
as,
it makes you jump. Like, do you know what I mean?
And it's weird because it's not the real scare of this whole scene, which I think is about to come. And that's the demise of Kelly, mm-hmm. his death scene. I find it to be genuinely terrifying.
It is like, genuinely terrifying.
Where it just grabs onto his leg, pulls him down. And then when he hits the ground, the way he like shoots off camera, like mm-hmm. it's just gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah. And I have a note. Whoops, another partner down the drain.
Oh, down the drain. And props to Robert Forster in this scene. I think he's killing it with the acting and his
really
genuine desire to not let his partner die.
Yeah.
And the way he's screaming, he's like, no, this is horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think he sells it really well. And then I love the way so you have the Kelly gets killed. Then you get Robert Forster yelling Kelly. And then it cuts to these shots of the empty sewers.
Yes.
And then it fades to white.
Yeah. White out. I feel it's very reminiscent of the Jaws kind of calm ocean
after Chrissy dies.
It's like a little buoy just kind of slowly ding donging in the background.
Yep, like it never happened.
Like it never happened.
Yep.
So I really like that. And then we get him waking up in the hospital, right?
Mm-hmm. And he immediately remembers what happened.
Yep.
They tell him he was running through the streets like a crazy person yelling alligator.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get his chief who comes in to check him out.
Yeah. So you get to see Robert's physique in this scene quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently he'd almost died. From spinal meningitis.
Yikes, man.
Which is a killer. Like,
yeah.
It's straight up.
I have a family member who had that as a kid.
Yeah, straight up bad.
No joke.
Yeah, it's no joke.
Yeah.
And he came back from it, but man, he was like lean and mean coming into this thing.
Yeah. Well, so he looks good.
Yeah, apparently, he'd almost died about a month before he shot this film. So,
way to go, Robert Forster.
I think he looks fantastic.
Yeah. Coming back, get right back into it, man.
Yeah. So yeah, the reporter shows, and then the reporter shows up at the end of the scene. What's this guy's deal? Like, he comes to the hospital? Like,
yeah, he's a jackass. And he's just
and anytime someone lights up in a hospital, it just like, it's so out of time for me.
Yeah.
Like
he's just so patronizing. Oh, something else I meant to mention, and this is as good a scene, good a time to talk about it as any since we're getting a look at Robert Forster's physique. So we've this has been like a weird running topic on our podcast is how old people look.
Mm-hmm.
How old is Robert Forster when he's shooting this movie?
38.
You're probably dead on.
Am I?
Yeah, he was born in 41. This came out in 80, so he's probably shooting it at 38 or 39.
Okay.
Right? He was definitely no older. When it came out, he was 39. And on one hand, I want to say like, yeah, he looks 39. But then on the other hand, I look at him and go like, he looks way older than me. Me and you, I'm almost 41.
Yeah, I'm 41. So
it just people lived, I don't know. Maybe we just don't, we don't see ourselves as old as we look. Like I'm better. Everybody.
There's honestly evidence that people do not age like they used to. Like,
yeah.
They just don't.
He looks, I think he looks older than I do, but that's just cause as I've seen this movie 10 times and for 99% of those viewings, he is older than me. Only now can I watch this movie and go, oh, I'm older than him now.
Yeah. Anyway. I would agree. He does look older than 38, mm-hmm. but that was just my guess. It was like 38. Like,
yeah.
But also he's not quite as old Hollywood as
Robert Shaw,
as some of our other guys. And Roy I know Scheider. I know he's only kind of a decade kind of newer than them, but,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, what a difference a decade makes, you know? Yeah. And then we get, and then you got people like Paul Rudd who ostensibly doesn't age.
Yeah. How old is he's probably 50, right?
Yeah. I think
Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, yeah. Keanu's looked the same for years. I mean, for
he's finally starting to not look like a young, he's going to start playing older roles.
But yeah. But he still looks fantastic.
Oh yeah. 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 Paul Rudd's a perfect example. That guy's barely changed in,
I mean,
30 years.
I just watched Halloween 6 with him, which is his first movie.
Yeah, 95 or so, probably.
Yeah.
94.
Yeah. 95 is the first is the film he did right before Clueless. Clueless,
yeah.
And which was genuinely the first movie I ever saw him in.
Everybody, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, he just, and he definitely looks a bit baby-faced in it, but man, not too different.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, anyway. That guy's awesome. Alligator scientist.
Oh, we meet Robin Riker.
Yes.
Our female lead.
Yes. Do you feel like, I feel like her look constantly changes in this movie. Like almost to where she's not recognizable, like from scene to scene.
In this opening
Am
scene.
Am I wrong about that?
Yeah. Her hair is very, she has her hair up in this first scene.
Like when I watched this the second time, I forgot that this was her.
Yeah.
And I was like, she looks so different. I was like, does he meet a different scientist before he meets our main scientist?
I feel like what her hair, she's always changing her hair. And depending on the lighting of the movie, it looks darker and lighter. And then in the whole love scene, she has wet hair.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's something about, I hear where you're coming from, that she takes a minute to establish herself in this movie.
Yeah. So yeah, so we meet Alligator Scientist. Nothing really much happens. She just kind of is introduced.
I love the line after they leave from the chief. I didn't say she was normal. I said she had the word on alligators.
Yeah, that's great.
She's not normal. She plays with snakes or whatever he says.
Yeah. And then he's like, hey, take a look at the front page. And the front,
front page yeah.
is cop loses another partner.
Well, that's like a movie trope though. Like it's a,
how is that front page material?
Isn't that a movie trope that like whatever is going on in your movie is front page
front
news.
Front page news.
No matter what it is.
That's insane to me. I love it, but it's stupid.
Yeah. Not disagreeing. Yet only, I think only guys like me and you are really like picking that apart and like questioning like,
why does that happen? Once again, all these notes, when you're just watching this movie, none of this is there for, it's so fast that you never even question it. It just happens. And he starts this. I love though. This is just good filmmaking. So he starts. David starts reading the story
while they're in the car.
While they're in the car, and then you get a scene transition to another person reading the same story and picking up where David leaves off.
It's perfect.
And it's a great transition.
Before we get, I love the another line. This whole car ride scene is great. There's another great line where his chief says, I'm like, it's just one of your nightmares. And he goes, nightmare your ass. Say nightmare my ass. He goes, nightmare your ass.
Nightmare your ass. Yeah.
There's
yeah.
something down there.
Yeah. It very much reminded me of foreground my ass. You know.
Yeah. Nightmare your ass. There's something down there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, then we cut to the paper cuts to someone else. Never mind that we're just driving through California.
Yeah, another
mountains in the background.
Yeah, and then another cop.
The locker room scene.
Yeah, locker room scene. A lot more locker room crap. as the rookie would say.
Yeah, the locker room's got a couch, some weights.
I think the guy's actually sitting on a bench press.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The guy who's reading it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's sitting on the bench press. And did you catch that behind his head there's like a poster on the locker of like something that looks like an alligator? And the camera pans by too fast to read what it says, but there's like a picture of an alligator, like a cartoon alligator on the wall. Anyway, it was weird.
I did not catch that.
That's one thing I do try to do in these rewatches is like, what's going on in the background? What's that over there?
There's a lot.
But apparently, I'm not paying attention to the dialogue.
There's a lot of little weird stuff in the backgrounds coming up here. So then we get the little plastic. He's like, "Hey guys, knock it off."
The alligator in his.
Yeah, and then they got the little plastic alligator. Yeah.
I have the scene up, and I finally am able to read the poster. The poster says, "Moving machinery is dangerous," and it looks like machinery in the shape of an alligator head.
Okay.
Anyway.
Cool.
Random. Funny.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's about as good place as any to cut it off for until next week.
I couldn't have picked a better place to stop.
I agree.
But we'll be back next week with more on Alligator. And be sure to check us out on Facebook. Look for the Real Jaws Minute Facebook group. And there you'll find a link if you want to hit us up on the PayPal and give us a couple bucks to offset our podcasting costs.
Yep. Like and subscribe. Tell a friend.
And give us a review on iTunes.
Oh, yeah. Apparently that's a thing and helps.
Preferably a good review.
Yeah. 5-star variety we love, but you know that. And you can catch us next time right here on the Real Jaws Minute.
Bye.
Bye.